Hello and welcome to the Wabi Sabi series podcast, unlikely conversations on uncomfortable topics. I'm your host, Michelle Cox, a corporate exec turned author who has recently written a series of books about topics we don't often talk about. Things like death, grief, not having kids, and the unexplained power doctors often wield over us. Apparently, some of my books have made some people feel a little uncomfortable, but I felt that I wanted to have far more conversations around weird, wonderful, and sometimes taboo topics. So I reached out to some interesting people and asked them just one question. If there is one topic that you'd love society to talk more about, what would it be and why? And what they've shared with me has been amazing. So let's dive in and see where the conversation takes us.
It's the top of the iceberg of what people see. And then everything underneath is Laura and I working three other jobs while also running a shop full time and tag teaming between the two of us.
Amy and Laura are the bibliophiles behind Social Enterprise Secret Book Stuff. Partners in business and life, they are both freelance writers, avid readers, whiskey enthusiasts, and advocates of all things books and kindness. Secret Book Stuff is currently operating as an online store full of pre-loved and brand new books, as well as bookish gifts. For every book sold, they plant a tree via One Tree Planted and donate a book to a child in rural Australian community. Send a book to a friend or treat yourself. Tell the Secret Book Girls what you'd like to read and they will find your perfect match. You can find them on secretbookstuff.com. I came across Amy and Laura through Instagram and their incredible stories that they post online. They're a lot of fun, gorgeous individuals, and I'm really excited to talk to you both today. So Amy and Laura, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
So the whole theme around the podcast is around one question, and it's if there was one thing you wish society would talk more about, what would it be?
We wish that people would talk more about the reality and the truth and the messiness of being self-employed, freelance, running your own business. On the surface, that kind of stuff is always quite glamorized and people tend to aspire to, you know, be your own boss, but the reality is sometimes very different.
Yeah, love it. So it's kind of in that genre of like, you know, self-employment sucks, right?
Yeah. In a nutshell.
And it's true, I think. Yeah, in social media and stuff these days, it is, you know, that entrepreneur, everyone thinks that's like the best thing to be. So have you found that's really not the truth at all? Is that sort of your experience?
Well, I mean, yes and no. Obviously, there are two sides to everything and we are super grateful for our lifestyle and the jobs that we've had and the things that we've been able to do in our careers. I mean, I speak for us both separately, but then also together running the business. But I think that what really gets up our goat a lot of the time is when people say things to us like, oh my God, your lives are so amazing. Oh my gosh, you just must have the best life. And it's like, well, yeah, because that's what we should aspire to. We should also aspire to love our lives. And we do love our lives, but 100%. Sometimes it's frustrating to hear that from people when we can tell that they're just glamorizing our situation and that they don't understand or know how hard we work or how tough we're doing it in the background.
I think it's a lot about like the busyness of it too. You know, all of the hashtags and stuff, they don't really necessarily, like, there's no hashtag for like 3 a.m. still packing orders kind of thing. Like, you know, it's not something that looks good on anyone's gram factor. And I think that working for yourself has so many rewards to it. And, you know, we've both done it in various capacities for a very long time. I guess like speaking for me personally, now going back to also working full time for a company, that was like quite a big culture shock for me personally, because I'm used to working A for myself and B with, you know, one other person who I happen to be in love with at the same time. So, you know, we have our own kind of language and understanding. But then I was like, what do you mean? You can't read my thoughts when I'm trying to say them to you in advance. So, yeah.
It's tricky, huh? And I think, so how long you've been a writer, a freelancer for quite a while? Have you worked for yourself for quite a while then, Laura?
Yeah, so I've been freelance writing for what, like 6 years or something now. Started off in music journalism because I had no money and wanted free tickets to things. And I loved learning about other people's lives. So it was a lot of writing, and I used to say that I make things up for a living.
You should pause on that for a second and talk about sleeping in airports, because you couldn't afford to sleep in Melbourne after going to a gig that you were being paid to write about. I mean, that's something that's not really glamorous, is it?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, you know, I did. I would fly down to Melbourne and I could just barely make the fare there to cover the gig that I really wanted to see. And I found like this perfect little spot in the international airport, and I would sleep there afterwards and just simply get the 6 a.m. flight the next day because it was heaps cheaper than the evening flight that day, you know. And so I roughed it for a long time, and I thought that that was what I had to do. And I mean, maybe I glamorized it a little bit myself, but I also think that there is this gusto and tenacity that comes from working for yourself. And I think that, you know, some people have it and some people don't. And I think that whenever anyone is working for themselves as their own business, you will find that crunch point, and you'll either push through and come out the other side, or you will, you know, become another hashtag, I guess.
Yeah, lose all your money and have to go crawling back, which many of us have done. So, and what about yourself, Amy? So you've done a lot of freelance type stuff, and actually you started the company initially, didn't you? The Secret Book stuff.
Yeah, so I've been freelance writing, editing, proofreading for, I would say, close to a decade now. And I also started Secret Book Stuff 3 years ago, sort of by accident, as a random act of kindness project. I was moving overseas, or my intention was to move overseas. Never quite made it there, because then I accidentally started a business and fell in love with Laura. So my intention was to move overseas. I needed to get rid of my books in a creative way, and I started wrapping them up in brown paper with little handwritten notes and leaving them around town. The idea caught on, the Instagram following grew, and then suddenly I had myself a small social enterprise bookshop online where you could tell me what your friend liked to read and why you were sending them a book, and I'd choose one from my shelves. And that's how Laura and I got together. So since then we've been running it together, and it's sort of grown and grown over the years, from doing markets to then opening the physical bookshop to then closing the physical bookshop when COVID happened, and running it online again. And yeah, so it's been a journey. And we've both sort of moved in and out of various jobs. You know, we've never just been working full time on Secret Book Stuff. We're not really there yet. And I think that's something that people don't know a lot of the time. They see how busy we are. They see how active we are on Instagram. They see the facade of it all. And we are very, I mean, it's not a facade. Like, we're very authentic on Instagram.
Oh, God,
but it is still a facade, because it's like, you know, it's the top of the iceberg of what people see. And then everything underneath is Laura and I working 3 other jobs while also running a shop full time and tag teaming between the two of us. And
so we can have
so the that business. We can have the business, you know, like we needed to work other jobs so that we could pay the rent for the shop until the shop could sustain itself, you know. So we've done a lot of things.
And I mean, like, you know, money-wise, like, there is this, I guess, to like to put a bit of a positive spin on the whole money thing. A lot of people, you know, they tell you that you need to have, you know, 15 grand in the bank before you start a business. You need to make sure you have X, Y, and Z all lined up before you open your shop. And we're always really transparent about money. I think we had about $250 in our account when we opened up the shop. Mm-hmm. I was very determined to find all of the furniture that we had in the shop was literally either from the side of the road or Gumtree or, you know, like deceased estates, those kind of things. And we did it all ourselves.
Yeah.
With pretty much no money and not no a lot notice. Of time.
Yeah. So we would literally wait for one of us to get paid from one of our other jobs so that we could go and buy a bookshelf that we'd seen on Gumtree for $50 or like a tub of paint so that we could paint a bookshelf, you know. So we were really like, we're still scrappy, but that was just over a year ago when we opened the shop, and it was really tough times.
Even though that's hard, do you think that that was part of the drive though? Because sometimes when you don't have money, it makes you be more creative and it makes you work harder and, you know, to come up with different innovative ways, and it probably makes it a bit edgier and actually even more interesting for people, right?
Yeah, we're definitely very scrappy. And I think that, you know, even now it translates into, you know, well, I can do this. You know, anything that we're doing, no matter what, our attitude is always like, it's fine, we can do this.
If something seems out of reach or like it's not doable or it's too hard or it's too expensive, we just look at each other and we say, remember that time we opened a bookshop with no money in 2 weeks? We can do this.
Yeah.
I love it. And I don't, scrappy's not the right word. I think you're clearly creative. You're, you know, like you guys, I love it. Like, yeah. But that's the way it should be. And entrepreneurialism, I think that's a thing. Like, let's actually, you know, actually highlight what it really is. It is scrappy. It's bloody tough. Like, you've got to get in there. You've got to, you know, you've got to hustle, right? And in terms of actually, I think most entrepreneurs, if you actually ask them the truth, would say, like, would you do it again? Maybe not. Would you do it the same? Probably not. But, you know, you learn a ton along the way, right? And I mean, there's two questions probably around, would you do it again? Or, you know, and if so, the same, or would you do things differently? Or what are your kind of words of caution to people if they're thinking about starting their own business?
I would do it again in a microsecond of a heartbeat. Like, if someone, you know, took us back in time and was like, hey, you know, this is how it's going to turn out, this is how you're going to feel many mornings at 2 a.m., I'm going to be like, that's fine. I'll take it. I'll do it again.
I agree. But I do think that we would have done things a little differently. If we had had more means, if we had had more money, I think that things would have been, yes, we still could have been creative. Mm. And yes, we still would have, you know, for example, got all the furniture from Gumtree, because that's in line with our eco values, for example. But
the pressure would have been off.
We wouldn't have had as many sleepless nights. We would have been able to hire people to help us move shelves into the shop instead of literally two little blonde girls carrying ridiculously heavy things every day of our lives, you know.
We're very strong now.
Yeah. And you saved a gym membership. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very, yeah. But I mean, like, you know, that side of things as well, like looking at the job I have now, I still operate in that job as though I'm working in a small business instead of in a company that has countless resources and money to do the things that they need to do. I'm like, well, I need this project done on InDesign. I have a spare 6 hours. I'm going to teach myself how to use it and do it myself.
If you have a topic burning inside you that you'd love to talk more about and have a conversation with me, I'd love to hear from you. So drop me a line at hello@wabisabiseries.com. Let's head back to the chat. You know, small business owners are often people that you want to have them on your team, I think, because they are incredibly resourceful, is my experience.
Yeah, I think I used to work for an agency in Sydney, a copywriting agency, and she only hired people who were entrepreneurs, who had a side hustle of some sort, because we were doing branding for startups and small businesses. And so she was like, you can't ever understand exactly what it's like to run a small business or start a small business unless you've done it yourself. So every single person in a small little company had to know. And I just really admired that about her at the time. It was really fun.
Great philosophy.
Yeah.
So what are your words of advice to someone that's thinking about starting? Don't do it, or make sure you've got the 15K in the bank. Or
It would help. It would definitely help if you had money. But also, you know, case in point, you don't need it. Mm. We're still kicking. We're still running Secret Book Stuff. Mm. It looks different every week depending on, you know, what the outside world looks like and what our inner world looks like too and what our bank statements look like. But we're still here and we're still doing it and we're still just as passionate. So I think that my advice would be, have the passion. Don't start something because you think it will be fun to be an entrepreneur, or you think you'll have more freedom and flexibility in your life if you were to like design t-shirts and start selling them on the internet. Because if you think of something on a whim like that for a superficial reason, like I want to work for myself, or I want to, you know, sell shit that's going to go to landfill, you know, it's not going to happen. It's not going to work. You're not going to last. Like, that's just to be super, super blunt.
Yeah.
Get a different hobby.
I couldn't agree more. I think that people do go in thinking it is going to be so glamorous and, you know, I'm going to have all this free stuff, or I'm going to be this, you know, incredibly successful person. But the hustle is real and it's really tough. And I actually think by yourself, it's even harder because you don't have people to bounce off. So it probably leads into the next question I have. I've had a number of businesses that have been by myself, or a number of businesses with partners. And I feel having a business partner is really good to be able to, especially someone that complements you, that's quite different. it's often tough because they might have a completely different opinion about something than you have, but you know, you kind of got to work that through. So, you know, you both obviously come to the party different. It was, you know, one of your business and then the other one sort of came in, and then you've got the complexity about actually being life partners as well. So how do you navigate that? And, you know, again, any words of advice for people as business partners and then having that kind of, you know, work-life love balance? How's that all go for you?
Well, my first piece of advice would be similar to what people say about having children. Don't have children to save your relationship. Don't start a business together to save your relationship. It's not going to work.
It's not what we did, by the way.
No, we didn't. Yeah. So we'd been together for about, I don't know, 3-ish months by the time I said to Laura, hey, do you want to do secret book stuff with me? Mm. And, you know, to take your point, Michelle, about what you said, that it can be tougher when you're on your own. I definitely experienced that. I had been running secret book stuff by myself for about 9 months at that point. And I was just riding the wave. You know, it was total organic growth. I had no idea what I was doing. I did not expect that to happen. And I was already starting to burn out because I had ridden that wave and it was coming down and I didn't know how to sustain it. And, you know, I was in a new relationship and all I cared about was Laura and nothing else. So, you know, you get distracted.
In the love bubble.
Love, you know. And then luckily Laura was such a book lover and I knew that she loved secret book stuff. So it felt right to ask her, hey, do you want to do markets with me? Like, let's get this thing off the ground again. And I could not have done anything that I have done in secret book stuff that we've done without Laura. Like, I don't think that secret book stuff would still be alive in the form that it's in now in particular if Laura wasn't half of it now. But it took a little while to get to that point because you didn't feel like 50% for a while.
No, I mean, like, you know, it's quite hard coming into something that was so organic and so Amy. Like, you know, the heart, especially in the beginning, there was no real differentiation between Secret Book Stuff and Amy. It was, that's what it was. So it took me a long time to be able to, you know, like find my own voice and my own feet. And, you know, I'd never run a business before, so I didn't really know what to do. And even the freelancing stuff I did, I learned that I picked up along the way that I, you know, I had to Google copywriting for God's sake when I first started because I didn't even know what that meant, but that's what I'd been doing for the last 3 years. You know, that's the kind of level.
That's gorgeous.
And I think that there's no one that I would want to work with other than Amy. I just can't even imagine what that would look like if it wasn't
you. Think about it sometimes and I'm like, would I be able to run a business with a friend? I mean, I'm sure I could, but it's hard to imagine when, as in a relationship, you can be hardcore with each other in a way that you probably can't with.
Yeah, you kind of cut through the crap, I find. Like, there's no softening. It's like, you're really pissing me off today, or you made a really dumb decision or whatever. So how do you navigate that then? And have you had some humdingers, like some doozy fights? Or
yeah, you know.
Oh, my God.
The main difference between Amy and I is that, like, Amy will not stop working for anything. Mm-hmm. And she has no sense of time management. So those two things together with somebody who, like, has really worked really hard to, like, a great work-life balance, really taking that time. And I'm always fucking on time, unlike someone else.
So Laura was in the army and her family is like an army family and they are so punctual and I am famously late to everything and it drives Laura up the absolute wall.
Yeah. So I think that that's like the main sticky point for us is, like, you know, really trying to work out the fact that Amy will not stop working until, but like, you're getting so much better. You're doing like so well with that.
And I think even, you know, as life partners, you can kind of navigate that a bit differently as well, because that would piss you off, you know, in home life too, if you're going out and someone's always like, sorry, I like to be on time as well. So I'm with you, hun.
Yeah.
Have you navigated that, like, in terms of in work with each other, like, who does what? Have you kind of got to that level? Because it is really important to get to a nice balance. And I think the experiences I've had of working with a life partner in a company before as well was that we never switched off. So even when we went home, we were still always talking about the company. And after, you know, 8 years of being together, that was exhausting. It was like we literally had been married for 20 years and, you know, it was just like we didn't really have anything else. So how do you guys switch off and ensure that you have, you know, other stuff just than the, you know, the company?
It's taken a lot of practice, I will say that. I mean, I had a, remember this? I'm just remembering this now. I had a freak out about a year ago when I suddenly thought to myself one day, oh my God, all we do, we'd just been running the shop for a few months, like the physical shop. all we do is go to the shop and organize the shop and talk about the shop and plan for the shop and like we don't do anything else anymore. Mm. What if we have nothing in common with each other? Like, why are we still in a relationship? Like, oh my God, do we still love each other? You know, because we were like, yes, we do both acknowledge that we have been working really hard and we don't really talk about anything else and we haven't really been making an effort to do other things. Mm. So we started to just implement little rules. Like we would go out to dinner, we'd go to the pub or something, mm. and then we would say we're not allowed to talk about secret book stuff while mm. we're eating dinner. And just like little tiny things like that then started to, I suppose, open up this whole breadth of experience that we could invite back into our lives, mm. which was having a life outside of running the business together. Yeah. And then we would have actual mm. nights off. You know, we'd have date nights and we would mm. have solo time as well, which is really important yeah. for us too. Like having separate yeah. hangout time mm. is really good for us because we're both introverts and we need to like...
Need ooh. To rewind. Yeah. And I think that, you know, the separation, like we complement each other really well, I think, because of like the different skills and way of thinking that we bring to the table, you know. And I have started to, you know, especially in the last year, not be such the person be like, well, I need to do this myself. It's like, well, we're in this together. And, you know, I approach any problem that we have now of like the first thing is like, it's okay. Cause you know, mm. I know that I'm fine, but also like we're in this together and mm. we can, you know, we can do that together.
It's definitely taken me longer to do that though. Like I'm a workaholic. I won't stop. I also am really good. Really good is probably the wrong way to say this, but I have high functioning anxiety. So when I'm anxious, I am super high functioning. Mm. I will not stop. I will do everything myself. I don't ask for help. I just do it all and I don't even involve Laura, and she has to like work really hard to kind of
to weasel, yeah.
get inside bust my in brain there. Yeah. and then mm. say, mm. stop, let yeah. me take some of this.
And that's why I think that, you know, took a long time mm. and like, you know, we've been together like almost 3 years now, and that the where we are now is like, I understand. Mm. I understand why Amy is getting up at 2 a.m. to go out to the storage shed, you know, to go and do something. Or like, yeah. you know, it's, you know, 9 p.m. at night and, you know, we've just had a massive day mm. and I know why that you're like, oh, it's fine. I'll just do this or just do this. Mm. And then, you know, suddenly it's, you know, midnight and we still haven't stopped. So
I think you're better at like recognizing the signs on my behalf, you know, because I don't always notice when I'm slipping into that
yeah.
control mm. freakishness. But Laura's pretty good at realizing it's happening and then gently mm. coaxing me out of it. And I think for me, it's definitely a self-care thing. Like the more time I am taking for myself and the more mm. self-care practices I am enacting in my life, the better I am at better. Recognizing my own yeah. high functioning.
I think it's
anxiety.
A good point. Yeah, because even if you're not life partners, when you have a business partner, like the beautiful thing is if you do have, you know, if you bring different things to the table and you can balance each other that way, that's been my experience in most successful companies that have dual partners. But the other thing is actually recognizing those points of when your partner is down or you need a bit of a pump up, and everyone goes through those kind of roller coasters, right? So the other really interesting thing I think for you and your business is, as we talked about right at the start, around it's important to do a business if you're going to start something, to be really passionate about it, because it's going to take that to get you through the roller coaster that is entrepreneurialism. But, you know, like you're saying about just when you say about going on a date and let's not talk about work, but you guys love books. So it's like, oh, I read this book. Oh, I want to tell you about that. So how do you, like, I mean, one, why books? Why do you love books so much? Because you've got this massive kind of private collection as well. And how do you then navigate that element of something that you're so passionate about, but then you kind of have to switch it off?
I think like the way we read is very different. And the way that we view books is also very different. I personally view books as, I like to collect them. I like to have them, you know, and I'll pick up a book and read a section of it and like sit with it, you know, like I'm a poet by, like I write a lot of poetry. So that to me, I like the power of a line or, you know, something like that. And I'll, you know, call Amy and be like, oh, listen to this line. And she's like, that's really nice and beautiful, but also like finish the goddamn book already kind of thing. But whereas like Amy tends
we need
to,
a review.
Yeah, like, you know, Amy tends to churn. Like I've never seen anybody really read like Amy before ever in my entire life. And I think that, Amy, you like to churn through.
Mm.
You love to finish a book.
I panic that I'm not going to have time to read all the books that I want to read in my lifetime. It's a serious concern of mine. And so I love just reading really fast and reading a lot. Whereas Laura's, I'm about the stories. I love the stories and the language and the sentences and the authors. Like, I love an author story and how they publish their book and who they are and why they wrote that and all that kind of thing.
Mm.
Whereas Laura's more like loves the physical object as well. Like two years ago, I think she was doing a bookbinding course and would always tell me about the different types of paper. And she will pick up a book and feel the paper and be like, oh, this is made from blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't understand. And look how it's been bound together. That. This was really popular in the 1940s. And I'm like, that's great.
And, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm like, with you,
the tactile of it. Yeah.
I love.
I was going to ask you about that.
And books will outlive us all. Like, you know, I bought a book that I just found that it's been in storage for so long from like 1859. And it's on writing and language. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I'll just keep that on my shelf. And I personally love knowing that I have it. You know, I'm not going to go and pick it up and like flip through it and read it. And like, you know, it's like,
but it means something to you.
They live and breathe that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if we're like on a date or whatever, and we're talking about books and reading, I really love challenging Amy on what she's reading. It's like a big hobby for me. And I'll be like, why do you like it? Tell me why you're reading it. Tell me why you'll finish it. So I hate
answering those questions. Yeah. I'm like, I just like it. Shut up. Leave me alone.
Let me just relax and read my book. It's supposed to be relaxing. So were you both always like that? Were you both always avid readers as kids?
Yeah.
Compulsory always. Half an hour reading time at bedtime.
It's so beautiful. And I mean, I was going to say, do you ever read anything online, like in terms of, you know, iPads or things, or you always have to be the physical book?
No, we're not snobby about that. We'll read anything. Like, we both have Kindles. We both listen to audiobooks.
I love audiobooks. Okay. I will always choose an audiobook over a physical book to read, because it's the way I like the, Amy's going to hate this and I say it in every single time. I like the way that the words sound. You know, I love the sound of the sentences as they fall across the page, basically. And I like to be impressed by language. And I think the best way for me, look, I'm just getting so frustrated. Like, the best way for me to be impressed by language is to really hear it and then to really feel it. I'm very, very sensory human, so.
I love it though. No, it's I've never heard anyone explain it that way. It's great. And do you feel on an audiobook that the author has to read it, or does it depend on the book?
No, I listen to We Need to Talk About Kevin, and the narrator was so amazing, and she just really nailed it, like the actor who was playing the book. And it's so interesting because I was watching an episode of Law and Order the other day, and the voice actor played a judge on Law and Order, and I like did a double take because I had this, you know, real sensory memory of her reading the book. And, you know, like things like I loved Misery by Stephen King, and that book was so chilling. And I think that, you know, it's like radio. There's this sense of intimacy with audio and voice, and it feels like it really is just for you. And, you know, I can't sit there like physically and read the book like that. I don't, it's a bit uncomfortable for me. Whereas like Amy, you can just like,
I'll lay around for days reading books. Yeah.
And you never feel guilty about that? Like that's because I find it quite decadent. And I think maybe growing up it was deemed as a bit of a decadence, you know, like, and, you know, sitting around reading books and like, what are you doing? You've got their jobs to do. Or so I don't know. That to me, I love it. But
I think in our household, reading was celebrated, definitely. So it was never a lazy, decadent thing. It was like, good on you for reading a book instead of watching TV or something like that. Interestingly, though, later in life, I have definitely, like, subconsciously viewed reading as lazy time, you know? So I would only read when I went to bed, and then I was so tired that I wouldn't be able to get through a page, and then I'd be asleep, and I'm like, oh, I'm not reading anymore. I'm not getting through books. And then I remembered that I'm allowed to read any time of day. Like, if I have a bit of downtime and I don't have to be working because it's Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m., I'm allowed to sit down and read a book in the afternoon. I'm allowed to sit and read my book in bed in the morning if I don't have to get up early. But I'm such a go, go, go person that I forget to wind down.
Like, I would be more surprised to have come home and find you reading and had been doing for an hour than I would be if you were alphabetizing our sock drawer. Like, yeah.
I love cleaning. Like, I feel like I can't relax until the whole house is exactly the way that I want it. And so
I would love
which
that.
Is
that's
challenging
to my
having
a lot of the time.
Yes. Given you've just moved into a new house, I think you've got a bit of work to do.
Which is why the bags, because we can't go to sleep until there's not one box in the house.
now you're getting into, you know, stuff that I love. So through COVID, the stuff that I organized between, you know, pantries and books and shoes and just cleaning everything out and then, you know, getting stuff in order, that really appeals to me, actually. It's clearly OCD nature. So now, if we bring this sort of full circle and, you know, you're talking about how tough it is. And I think the interesting thing, as we sort of touched on, was around, you know, running your own business and these days with social media and both having come from that sort of space. And I love your Insta feed. Like, that's how I found you both and just sort of connected with you there. And you're very authentic. You're incredibly real on it. And that's what really draws people in, I think. But you also, as you said before, like the packing at 2 a.m., you do those stories. You're like, here we are. And you're surrounded by books and boxes. And I'm like, oh, I completely relate. It's not just me working at 10 o'clock at night. So, what do you want to say about that? Because I think there's so many people that, you know, don't show the real stuff. And I think it's really important to show the hard side of having your own business as well, right?
Yeah. No one wants to see anything but aspirational, inspirational content on Instagram. And honestly, I think the whole platform is a crock of shit, to be honest. And I will preface that by saying that our personal feed, you know, the majority is Amy planning the feed. And she works very, very hard at our social media and doing all of those things, because I find it a little bit hard sometimes to connect to the platform where, you know, I know why people are looking at it, because they want to look at something that they don't have a lot of the time. Mm. And so I think that it's always been so important for us to be very clear about the messages that we're putting out on Instagram. Is like, you know, I'm not afraid to show myself in my PJs on a Sunday, because that's what I'm wearing on a Sunday morning. Like, you know, we're never going to get up and get changed and get done and, you know, do that kind of thing just to like.
Oh, it's so nice though. It's so refreshing, Laura. And I think also when I was just thinking about this stuff, because you aren't on there all the time, when you do little updates about the books you've read or, you know, a bit of us, because you both read so differently, as you've said. So that's really cool. I love it. I love the diversity in it. And that just kind of go, oh, that's interesting. And that was very different to what Amy talked about. So yeah. It's actually really nice, the balance, because your audience is quite, you know, large. Totally. So you would be appealing to different people, which is fabulous.
And
so
people
keep
are getting
on
to
it.
Know us by like our differences too, which is really like, we love that when someone sends a message and is like, oh, I really agree with Laura about this, like sorry Amy
I win
or whatever, you know.
Yeah,
like that's really fun and we love that. But
because like Instagram is really important. You know, as much as I rag on the platform, I know how it is essential to our business, and it is like, you know, it's absolutely an amazing tool.
And we've
to
made
use.
Some amazing connections with people and amazing friends. And we love a lot of the people who we talk to all of the time and really respect on that platform. It's a love-hate thing. And also, like, on that note, the love-hate thing, it's a very delicate balance between being authentic, but then also, I don't know, being too authentic or too, you know, because we're private people. Like, it doesn't seem like it on Instagram, but we're very private people. And we have our private lives and we have, you know, whatever's going on beneath the surface and in the background. And while we are really authentic and we don't curate our feed too much or what we say or the messages or like, you know, Laura's, you know, we're always wearing pajamas or whatever it might be. We don't care about stuff like that and we will tell the truth. But also, no one wants to be on Instagram and then see someone complaining about their business. You know, like if we're doing it tough financially, we want to be authentic and not fake it that we're doing really well, but we also don't want to whinge, you know? So it's like, it's this really delicate balance about
good
how
balance.
To play it. Because no one loves a whinger. No one wants to know the absolute ins and outs of someone's business. But I do personally think that it's really healthy to be authentic about the ups and downs when possible, because like we've been talking about this whole time, people can, especially people who've not run a business before or been entrepreneurs or been self-employed, they have a totally warped view of what that looks like. And so they might be jealous of us in our lives in an unhealthy way for them. And I don't want, like, I know it's a very big burden to take on, but I don't want anybody to compare themselves to us in a negative way and be like, oh my God, look at what they have. Look at all the things they're doing. They must be so rich. They must be so successful. Look at all those orders going out. And what am I doing? Like, that makes me feel awful that people might think that. And so I find myself really taking on this burden of like, we've got to be authentic, we've got to tell the truth. Like, I don't want to fake it until we make it. you know, I don't resonate with that at all.
That's where a lot of my drive for like my qualms with Instagram come from, is that, you know, it's this projection of unhappiness of like, you know, I don't have that, so there must be something wrong, or there must be something missing, or my lounge room doesn't look like that, or my holidays don't look like that, you know, that kind of thing. And I think that it can be quite damaging a lot of the time to so many people. And so, you know, we try, it's a really hard line.
We just want to be real. We want people to know that we're real people. We're just two people running a little side hustle. Like, oh, we got this really rude Facebook message recently from someone. I gotta tell this story.
Drama.
We haven't talked about this publicly great. Before.
I was about to go. It sounds juicy.
Interesting. And so we got this message from a woman who, she'd ordered a book for her friend during COVID.
Mm.
And, you know, without giving away too much information, because I would never want anyone to recognize themselves, but her friend had lost her job, like a lot of people. And she worked in travel and tourism and really loved traveling and bloody, bloody, blah. I needed something to make her feel better. And so we sent this book, which I can't say the name of, because then they'll know that we're talking about them.
Oh, damn it, I almost blurted it out.
I know. I was like, wait a minute, don't say it.
You can feel me.
Anyway, we sent this really perfect book by a famous philosopher who most people have heard of, all about travel and happiness, right? So, right? Like, sounds pretty fucking perfect.
I love how you're still not, hung up
I reckon
this.
I know
not
the book.
Not to toot our own horn, but we're pretty good at this. Like,
Amy picked the book, as you can probably tell.
I picked the book off my personal shelf for this woman, and she sent a message on Facebook with all of these capital letters, really aggressive, did not address us by name or anything, just like, hi, comma, I am so disappointed in this gift that my friend received, and I wanted this, and I said this about her, and you sent this tatty old book about buildings or something, like, it was so random. And we were like, what the hell is this? And so, you know, we dealt with it really well.
On the outside.
On the outside, obviously, like responding to her with kindness.
How did you deal with it, though? Did you deal with it online or did you take it offline? Because that's a really interesting thing for people to understand in terms of a really good social media presence, because some people feel that they have to do all that out, you know, in front of everyone because people are watching. Or,
well, interestingly, so what did you do? She sent us a private Facebook message. Yeah. So it wasn't even a like review or anything. It was just to us, but she obviously didn't know who we were or what we were about. I think that she probably thought that she had used some big company that sends gifts, and, you know, so she thought that she could just absolutely tear us a new one with all these capital letters. You know, I think she was having a bad day and wanted to take it out on someone. And then I wrote back, and after taking many deep breaths and having a rant with each other and then calming down.
Me talking you down.
Another good benefit of having a business partner.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll let you talk to yourself on the wall. Yeah. How should I answer?
And I just wrote back, and I really just, I took a, I guess, a humanistic type response instead of being like, we are so sorry to hear that you are disappointed in our product, because that's not who we are.
Yeah.
I was like, hi, whoever your name is. I'm really, really sad to read this message. We poured a lot of energy and effort and thought into that. Here is what you said about your friend. Here is exactly why we chose this book. It's really important. It's a famous philosopher. We thought that she would like it. We made sure that it was good condition. But as you know, we do send out pre-loved books because that, you know, speaks to our sustainable philosophy.
And, yeah.
You know, so I just explained a few things that I'm sure she didn't really know about us when she ordered. And I said, you know, if you want to talk about this further, we can definitely do that. Here is our phone number. We'll refund you the order for you. But, you know, just so you know, we're two people, like we're two young girls who run, we're not a big company. We're two girls who are running this business on the side. We're having a tough time during COVID too. And, you know, we're doing our best and we're really sorry that you were disappointed. And she didn't write back. obviously, because I think that she realized, oh, fuck, they're just two actual humans running this little business that's all about kindness. And I just had a rant to them with capital letters and I was totally off the mark because I was having a shit day, you know? So that's one of the really interesting things. Like it's maybe happened twice in 3 years.
Wow, which is amazing. But I think, again, it comes back to that authenticity and stuff. So you have some really cool stuff that you do online. So you're currently doing a weekly writing group as well as you do book reading live online as well. So can you tell me a bit about that?
I'll talk about Sit Between the Pages, which is what we do, something every fortnight, which was actually to encourage me to read more. It was Amy's last ditch attempt to be like, right, you're going to read something. But I really enjoy it. It's once a fortnight we get on Facebook Live and Instagram Live and read either some of our favorite books out loud, or we also pick a selection of brand new books that we're currently stocking and currently loving, which is most important. And we have a little bit of a sip of vino while we're doing it. So, and we, you know, critique each other as we discuss the books that we're reading. Love and heckle.
It's pretty fun. Because that's the kind of thing that we would do in our personal lives. And so when COVID happened and people were looking for more connection, we started doing that. We thought it was fun.
We just like film. I mean, like, you know, we read to each other all the time. Like, you know, whenever we take a long trip or whatever, we would always read to each other in the car. Like, it's not,
that's,
you know,
so
it's
beautiful.
It's just like a normal thing for us because we love it. And we like to, I mean, for me, I like to impress Amy with the words that are written down. So, you know.
Back to, you love the sound of the words. I love it. Ladies, it's been so awesome to talk to you both and to get to know you more and understand more about your business and the philosophy and, you know, why you do what you do. So thank you so much. Keep being so authentic online because I personally love it. That's how, you know, I found you and wanted to come and meet and have a chat to you today. So I'll have all the information about your business and stuff in our show notes and stuff. So I really encourage everyone to connect with you both and to buy lots of books from you because the art of, you know, reading is alive and well, and it's a beautiful thing to see. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
If you'd like to learn more about today's guest, you'll find all the show notes and interesting links on our website, wabisabiseries.com. If you'd like to hear more unexpected conversations, please subscribe to the series, follow us on our socials, or grab one of my books. And if you're in a generous mood, I'd love you to share the episode, or maybe even rate, review, and comment on the series. It really does make a difference. Until next time, be sure to claim your own piece of wabi-sabi and walk proud in your perfect imperfection.